Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, it's that time of the week again when Owl Post is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, just a bundle of joy, Drea Kaufman.
So you're dead serious when you say that, but I definitely laughed and had a sarcastic moment with myself. I definitely was like, yeah, right.
I love it. Oh man, well, we're so excited to be back.
Speak so highly of myself,
well,
guys.
Well, you know, everybody's a little bit self-deprecating, I think, if you're smart, right? You know, so. But we have a great show for you as we're going to be diving into the Weighing of the Wands, Chapter 18. We're really starting to make some progress here through the Goblet of Fire. But if you want to catch up with us, we're all over the place. So make sure you're checking us out over there on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as they call it now. Give us a star rating review. Help other people find the show. It really does. I know we say this every time, and you're probably tired of hearing it. But, you know, if you haven't given us a star rating review, it really does help the show. So if you like what we do here, let us know by giving us that. And we'll call you out on the podcast, and thank you for that. So.
Well, I'm going to call you all out and thank you anyway. So thank you. There. Yeah. See?
There you go. Yes. We thank you for everybody who's already gone and done that. So
that's where we're at today, everyone. It's going to be a sassy episode.
Oh, sassy. You can also find us all over the place online. You can find us on Twitter. You should be following us at Join Nerd Party. And of course, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We've got thenerdparty.com. And we've got thenerdparty.com/contact, where you can choose a show, you can choose Outpost, and you can send us an email, and you can talk to us that way. Drea, this chapter, I think it is, it's kind of a melancholy chapter. it is not going really well for Harry. He's just not having a good day because, well, he woke up, and everything that just happened the night before, concluding with his fight with Ron, it is not a nightmare. It is still happening.
Yeah, it's a crappy day. It's one of those, I guess, maybe weeks, days. He just kicks off with just not. I mean, I love that they're like, he woke up and he had this feeling of like dread and something else. And he's like, I couldn't remember why. Oh, worry and dread. And then he woke up and it was like, oh, yeah, that's why. So you have to imagine he did not get a lot of restful sleep that night.
Yeah, no, not at all. And I think it's interesting because he's hoping that Ron and him will have come to his senses, and it hasn't. It's not happening. And he makes his way out of the portrait there, out of the common room, runs right into Hermione, and Hermione's like got a ton of toast in her hand, and she's like, you want to go for a walk? And he's like, that's a good idea.
I love that she knew exactly, like, he's not going to want to come in here. He's not going to want to come to eat. He's going to need to eat. Like, let's get him something to eat and take a walk. Like, I just love that she knew exactly what he needed.
Well, and what I think is really fantastic is, you know, they have this whole conversation and she, of course, believes him. She's like, I believe you. There's absolutely no way you did that. And then, of course, on top of that, Hermione's so smart, she's putting together, but who put your name in? You know, so they start having that conversation, and Harry just kind of interrupts. He's like, have you seen Ron? And she's like,
I don't know if you want to go there.
Yeah, and then she starts explaining to him, you know, what Ron is feeling and about how he's jealous, and Harry's just like, why is he jealous? And she just launches into, he's jealous because it's not your fault, but you're the one who always gets the credit and the, you know, the limelight, and he would like to be in that position, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's got all these brothers. It's pretty much exactly what we identified last chapter as what was happening with Ron, you know, except for Hermione's now explaining it to Harry and saying, hey, dude, of course he's upset. How did you not see this coming? You know? I do find it interesting though, because the whole chapter, Harry basically sits around waiting for Ron to come to his senses and come and sort of like apologize to Harry. And while we don't get much of Ron's side, we get the impression that he's probably waiting for the same thing, but from Harry. So you've got this like Mexican standoff of best friends. And it's so sad because it's the every time Harry says kind of shares or every time Rowling kind of shares Harry's experience at the moment, it's always laced with, oh, and it would be so much better if Ron was here. But this would be so much more manageable if my best friend was here. Like over and over again, it's like, oh, it's like a kick in the stomach every time. It's terrible.
Well, and you know, what I love is the way that she writes this and you feel Harry's pain, right? Like he's not asking for this. This is the last thing that he wants. He's tired of being famous, right? He's tired of people looking at him at his scar and staring at him. And, you know, this just makes it worse. And he doesn't understand what it's like to be Ron, because of course he doesn't have family, right? He doesn't have those things. He doesn't have brothers and sisters, you know, that he has to try and live up to and all that kind of stuff. So he doesn't have that experience, and it's hard for him to understand how anybody could think differently about this. But it's also very hurtful for him because this is the time when he needs his best friend. And he's not right there. And so there's that double pain. And I just, I think the way that she writes this here is really smart. And on top of that, you know, Hermione's doing her Hermione thing where she's like, and you need to write Sirius. And she just forces him to write a letter to Sirius, which, oh, it's so
she like supervises it. I love that. She like sits down, does it, like makes him write it in front of her and send it out in an owl. Like, I'm surprised you didn't spell check it or something,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But spell, like not like grammar, like spell check it. Ha ha ha. Get it? Get it?
Oh, I get it.
That was bad. That was real bad. The interesting thing that I liked about this chapter, that I kind of think is one of the first times we sort of see this, is it really sort of spells out what each individual member of this of the Trinity sort of brings to the table and how they sort of all complement each other in some way. And it really sort of shows how that can break down when they're all sort of isolated and by themselves, right? Like Harry's sort of got this natural talent and this charisma, and Hermione's got like those book smarts, and then Ron's just got the like the spunk and has everyone's back and has this like intense wizarding knowledge. Like they all play a very important role in being like successful as a mm-hmm. team. And this is one of the first times where this team has sort of like broken down and we have these individual pieces and you're seeing that they're like not working right. The way they should be working because they're not working together.
Well, and I mean, this is the thing, you know, Harry, Ron and Hermione are a Trinity, you know, and it very much kind of references the biblical Trinity, you know. Harry kind of is that the father of it, where he's, you know, like he's the head of it, but then you have Hermione as that Holy Spirit who's always trying to get them to do what they should be doing, and you know, Ron's kind of like the son. You know, you put them all together and they work the way they're supposed to. But then if you take one out, you are missing a piece, you know, like it's kind of like, you know, for a married couple, if you've been married a long time and like your spouse has to be away for a long period of time, you have to like relearn how to be a person, you know, because like you're kind of used to having that right arm with you, you know, it's like having that taken away. And so there's this whole piece of them that it's out of whack right now. And so and
you can tell that each of them are feeling that way, like in a different way, but they're all sort of feeling like, ugh, this is not good, you know, because Hermione's sort of in the middle, and there's a couple times where it says she kind of is making, like, awkward, forced conversation, but, you know, and she's like, I'm not going to tell Ron, like, that's, you know, you tell Ron, and Ron's just sort of sulking in the corner, and Harry's just like, ugh, you know, it's just, you can see each of them sort of suffering in their own way, all because both Ron and Harry are a little obstinate. And don't want to be the first one to make a move, which reminded me of Stranger Things in the end of the first season, where mm-hmm. you learn that the boys have this like secret thing that whoever draws first blood or starts the fight has to be the one yeah. to apologize, you know? And I was like, oh man, if only they had that in mm-hmm. Harry Potter, like, you know, this kind of understood code, then they'd be fine. But unfortunately, that was a separate universe.
Well, and it's not getting any better for Harry this week, because everybody at the school is against them. Obviously, Slytherin is.
Except for Gryffindors.
Except for Gryffindors. But
it's so weird.
But whereas the other houses have a good relationship, they're you know, when it comes to Quidditch and stuff, they're, you know, their own house. But in other things, they're usually there for each other, the other three. And this time, it is not that way at all. You know, Ravenclaws aren't happy with Gryffindor and Harry. Hufflepuffs are definitely not happy with them. And so it's making for just a very rough week. People are wearing badges against Harry Potter that, you know, say he stinks, you know, and all this stuff. I mean, it's like, it couldn't be much worse than what it is. And on top of that, you know, as we talked about, Harry has lost his best friend being there for him. And it's just not helping. And the only thing that really goes right this whole week is the fact that he gets out of double potions early. Like, that's about the only thing.
And the fact that Hagrid believes him. Right?
This is
like,
true.
He doesn't have to convince Hagrid. He didn't have to convince Hermione. You know, like, he does have a few people who believe him. I like to think of them as the, like, adult-like people who believe him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm pretty sure McGonagall believes him.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Professor Sprout believes him, even though she seems kind of bitter about mm-hmm. things, you know. But, like, for the most part, I think he's got a couple of advocates, but obviously the kids can't think like that. They're just, you know, they're kids. They're not really capable of
right.
understanding that, you know, Harry did not put himself in mortal danger. And if you've ever talked to Harry, you know that this is the last thing on earth he'd want. So, you know, he has a couple advocates, but yeah, other than that, the best thing is that, you know, after he gets into a mini duel with Draco and makes Hermione's teeth grow like super huge, then, and gets detention for a week, he gets to get out of double potions and not be tortured by Snape, because I don't think I could have read much more of that in the chapter.
Oh, it was hard to read. Harry and Malfoy have a fight, like, in the hallway, and their spells end up ricocheting off each other, and one of them hits Hermione, and her front teeth, unfortunately, start growing big time. And the one time that Ron comes to their aid is because Hermione got hurt, which I thought was cute. But unfortunately, Snape is being his usual Snape self and looks at Hermione. He's like, oh, well, I don't really see any difference in her at all. And he's...
That was so mean for a teacher. So mean.
He's a jerk face.
Deserves the John Ralphio worst, because he's the worst. He's the worst.
Oh, man. You know, I just... This scene, like, there in the way that Snape was acting at this moment, it was just so spiteful and so mean and so nasty. And then, you know, Harry gets pulled out of potions, which is great, but then he realizes, because he's talking to Colin, like, why he's getting pulled out, and it's because the Daily Prophet is there. And he's like, oh, great, what I need, more publicity. And it doesn't go awful, but it doesn't go great, you know.
Argue it goes pretty awful.
Well, it goes pretty awful in that, we meet, Rita Skeeter for the first time, and she is just as awful as her articles make her seem she is in real life. In fact, maybe worse.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think we've met her work before, but we've never met her.
Yeah,
Rita Skeeter is the one who wrote the article on Arthur Weasley at the beginning of the book on the Quidditch World Cup fiasco.
Yes.
And I think she's also the one who wrote the Mad-Eye Moody article.
Yep. We keep hearing her name.
So she keeps coming up, and now we finally get to meet the wizard or witch behind the quill.
And we realize she's pretty much a toad.
And we get to meet the quill.
Yeah.
We get to meet the quill.
She's just a toad. You know, she is somebody who is in this for the gossip. She is in this. She is a reporter. Let me put it this way. I think it is funny because I don't think starting here and just kind of throughout the rest of the series, Rowling's feelings on the media, I think, become quite clear. And Rita Skeeter is the quintessential example of one of the reasons she does not like the media. And I think it's kind of funny the way that she just shows them in this light, because this is what so much of the media is: unscrupulous and willing to do anything to get a story, even if they have to make half of it up.
Well, and I loved the mechanism she uses to do that, right? So instead of just being like, Rita Skeeter like lies, right? We all kind of expect that just based on the character that she's created. But she gives them this really interesting mechanism, which is this quill that's like a quick quotes quill. And it supposedly, she's like, oh, it lets me engage in, you know, normal conversation with you while it takes notes. And you come to find out that it adds all of these embellishments and sort of edits the facts of what's happening. And it just creates this really interesting, like, it basically is how Rowling feels about media, but it projects it onto like an object versus a person. So it was just really interesting. And I think the quill is such a unique magical tool. And it made me think back to the second book, when Mr. and Mrs. Weasley tell Ginny never to trust a magical object that can think for itself. And that just kept resonating with me. Like, don't trust the quill. Don't trust the quill. Like, it's not going to lead to anything good. So,
well, and it's, you know, I mean, obviously they have a relationship, her and this quill, because this quill is, you know, doing exactly what she wants, which is, you know, attractive blonde Rita Skeeter, 43, whose savage quill has punctured many inflated reputations. I mean, it builds up her ego and it gives her what she wants, which is a story that is highly embellished and most likely half untrue, if not more than that. So
it just sensationalizes everything.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that Dumbledore interrupts them in the broom closet.
Yes.
And she's like,
oh, I love, first of all, I love that it's in a broom closet, because I mean, let's talk about cupboards again.
Can we just say how well the movie actually does this scene?
How awkward and cramped and like gross.
Yes,
and
yes.
Because
she kind of has this like skeevy sexual vibe toward Terry, and it's just nasty.
But I love that she puts him in a cupboard. I love that. That's like a throwback to what happened to Harry before. Like, I think it's hilarious, and just a small little detail that you're just like added just a little bit to the already awkward horribleness of his week. You know, the famous line from the scene in the movie, though, is not in the book, which I'd completely forgotten. You know, where he's like, my eyes are not swimming with the ghosts of my past.
Right.
Like, that's not actually in the book. That was very much so made up.
Well, because he just says, I don't have tears in my eyes, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. It's not as poetic.
Yes.
But yeah, I do, like you were saying, Dumbledore interrupts them and, you know, pulls them out of the closet. And I love how he just is unapologetically, like, confrontational to her. Just no punches pulled. And I love that he's like, yes, it was, what was it, interestingly nasty.
Yeah, and enchantingly nasty.
Oh, enchantingly nasty, yeah. And he's
about her article that
you called me a dingbat.
Yes. Her calling him an obsolete dingbat. And he's just so pleasant about it. Like, you know.
And he's got this twinkle in his eye, which always makes me think that he's just like, he knows exactly what he's doing.
Well, and then Dumbledore says something fantastic. He says, I will be delighted to hear the reasoning behind the rudeness, Rita, but we don't have time to discuss that at the moment. So, like, he's just killing her with kindness. And it's just so wonderful. And it's one of the things about Dumbledore is that he doesn't get overly upset about things. He disarms people by being charming. And yep. It's great.
And I imagine it's because you don't get to be 100 and whatever without
that's true.
Like learning how mm-hmm. to do that. Like that getting angry and upset and worked up every time someone writes something nasty
bad
about
blood
you
pressure.
At after 100 years, like you don't have it in you anymore. Like it's not serving you. It's not doing you any good. You know, the best thing you can do is just take it in stride and know what's true about yourself and just call them mm-hmm. out on their BS when you have the opportunity, which is exactly what he does.
Well, and what's interesting is that chapter we finally get to the weighing of the wands, which is something that you're going to want to pay attention to because it's going to be important later on in this series. And here is our first taste of hearing about wands again and how they're made.
And wand lore.
This is also where we get confirmation that Fleur is actually part Vila.
I love that Harry's like, oh, I got to tell Ron. Yeah. Oh, crap, we're not talking.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, and you notice what's so interesting here is that I find it fascinating to me that Harry's not affected by Fleur in that same way.
Yeah.
Which is it's just something that's interesting to me. Like, and maybe it could also possibly be that there's a certain time when Fleur can kind of put on the air, which allow, you know, the pheromones or whatever, you know, that attract.
Well, she can turn the attention.
Yeah, she can turn it on and turn it off, you know. Yeah. So, I just think it's interesting that he doesn't have the same attraction to her in the same way that Ron does. I mean, I get it. You know, Fleur, I kind of picture as being this like out of body experience, beautiful type person. And Ron just, you know, he's a teenage boy and he can't help himself.
I feel a little bit like, especially being part Vila versus full Vila, like we sort of experienced at the Quidditch World mm-hmm. Cup right here at the beginning. I sort of imagine it as like Harry is so distracted and
yes.
so upset
yes.
and so just beat down that I think there's a part of him that like, you have to be a little more accepting mm-hmm. and open to
yeah.
being like wooed, you know? And so him being so upset and just having so much on his mind that he doesn't have the opportunity. Like there's just no place for that. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like he's not looking for an escape. He's not looking for her to be beautiful. He's just thinking about the Triwizard Tournament and Sirius and how everyone in the school hates him and how he might die and... You know, like he's got big things to worry about, so there's not really any room for the little.
He doesn't have time for that. Like, who likes who? Crap. You know, he's
yeah.
got bigger things to worry about.
And we've kind of mentioned and alluded to a little bit that you know he thinks that Cho Chang's kind of the shiz. So I mean, maybe that has an effect too. You know, if mm-hmm. you know she's not turning it on and he's got feelings for someone else, it's probably an easy wash. You know,
yeah, that's true.
But what I love about this scene is that we're kind of flashed back to the very first book right near the beginning where we learn a little bit about Harry's wand. And we're reminded that his wand shares a partner wand or a sister wand. I don't remember what they call it. That is the same wand that Lord Voldemort had, or he who shall not be named. And I love that Harry's like, oh, I didn't tell anybody. Please don't say anything. Please don't say anything. And for whatever reason, Ollivander doesn't say anything. Just goes on, tests the wand, and is like, here you go. Let's move on. I found that's so interesting that Harry nor Ollivander, no one has kind of shared this information. So it kind of makes you think that maybe it'll be important or it's so unimportant that it doesn't matter, but that's probably not likely. But yeah, I think it's really interesting that even Ollivander didn't think to mention it while going through and describing wands. Like that would be the perfect time to share that information. So,
well, and it also, I mean, I wonder if for him, Ollivander, there's a certain sense of propriety in that, you know, your wand is so personal to you because the wand chooses the wizard, and therefore You know, that kind of information could be something that would very much
put him out of business. Yeah.
Well, and not just that, but I mean, it's something that, I mean, when you think about it, that's, again, that's a very personal thing. And what, I don't know what I'm trying to say. The idea that Harry shares this wand core, this Phoenix wand core, that, you know, it came from the same Phoenix, and so he's linked with Voldemort in that way. I absolutely think that he realizes, you know what? It's not my place to put this on this kid, you know?
I almost think that it almost has more to do with, like, ego, right? He made the wand that caused all kinds of mayhem and mischief, and that maybe that's not really something he wants to advertise and remind people that, you know, hey, by the way, that terrible dark mm-hmm. wizard that did all of this crazy crap. Oh, yeah, no, I gave him his wand. Don't worry about it. Like, uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I know. And I also think maybe there's almost like a confidentiality thing, right, with who buys the wand and its background, correct? Yeah. That it's about, who would want people to know that they have the same wand core as
the worst dark wizard of all
exactly.
time.
And so in some ways, yeah. I felt like he was protecting Harry here as much as he's also protecting himself, that they go together. So I think that's something that is really interesting. And on top of that, when he is looking at Crumb's wand, we hear about another wand maker, Grigorovich, for the first time. And yeah. So we get a lot of different things here about wand and wand lore, which is fascinating to me. And I love that she just continues to kind of deepen our understanding about these things. And I can't wait to see how some of this plays out. Lastly, Harry gets a letter from Sirius, and he wants to be able to talk to Harry, but he can't do it over the letter, of course, just in case it got caught. And so they set up a meeting for him to be downstairs in the Gryffindor Tower at 1 o'clock in the morning so that they can have a conversation. And that's where we leave the chapter that I think Harry is ready for this very bad, not so good, horrible day to be over.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's ready for, I mean, it's kind of a series of days. I'm imagining it's like about a week's worth of crap. I mean, everything from, mm-hmm. you know, just terribleness to, what did he say, Trelawney predicting his death in a more specific mm-hmm. manner this time around, right? Everything is just downpouring on him. And I think he's ready for the first task to get started. I think he's ready to just get this started and over with. And so the weighing of the wand sort of kicks all that off, because now they're kind of approved to go mm-hmm. forward and compete. So it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out. And so far, we've got some fairly similar situations to the movie with a few key differences. But for the most part, so far, story-wise, we're a little true to that. So,
yeah, I think the thing I really enjoy about this is just that they add, you know, the things about the wands, and we do get a little bit, again, it's just a book, and we get more flavor about what's going on, and we really
character depth, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
And we really, yeah, get to dive into the frustration of Harry, you know, so I like that. And the frustration of Ron and even Hermione, you know, this trinity that's kind of been torn asunder at the moment, and hopefully will find their way back to each other. So excited to dive into the next chapter next week. But anybody wants to talk to you about this chapter or anything else Harry Potter related, Drea, where can people find you?
Sure. If you want to come chat with me on Twitter @PCFChick, or you can come check out my Instagram on at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N. Just be forewarned, there's adorable pictures of my child on there, including her dressed like Minnie Mouse, which was super fun.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week, which is so fun. Very excited to be doing that. We have a blast, so I hope you'll check that out. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network with Chris Jones. We talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine on the Orb, and doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, talking about all the fandoms we love, which is so much fun. We don't have to discriminate. We just get to talk about what we love, all of them. And then doing Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.